out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday, the 11th of May, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. As it's Friday, I am very pleased to welcome Florian Geyer to the show. Florian, how are you doing today?
I'm doing just grand, Sven. It's really lovely to be here in the spring-summer season in Canada. And I'm all done my undergraduate degree and all that, so it's a very delightful thing to be on with you once again this fine Friday morning.
Oh, that is good news, and it's traditional Welsh weather here. It's raining, but we do have some light-hearted and uplifting news stories for you today for a change, I think, for the end of the week. I think these are, I'm quite surprised to find three faintly funny news stories today when looking through the news. And the first one is Magic Negress Police Poster Girl loses 33 separate claims of racism against her employers. Good news indeed. A former police poster girl has lost a £144,000 race claim after a tribunal heard she had a tendency to complain of prejudice whenever she was unhappy at work. Well, I never. Ex-Met officer Carol Howard accused her employer, the Independent Police Complaints Commission, of discrimination and harassment, but a tribunal concluded the 39-year-old would complain of victimisation if she does not like what is happening or is prevented from doing the work she chooses. The hearing was told she lost her temporary job with the IPCC after falsifying timesheets and for poor performance. Dismissing all 33 of Ms. Howard's allegations, Judge Joanna Wade said her claims to be the victim of a witch hunt were unfounded. In a damning ruling, the judge suggested a £37,000 payout in a previous action against the Metropolitan Police 4 years ago lay behind her claim against the IPCC. So she thought because she's won before, she would make a few more claims. The former firearms officer suffered from an astonishing lack of perspective and very poor judgment, it was said. The judge said, "We are left with the uncomfortable conclusion that the claimant has an unshakable but incorrect belief that if she does not like what is happening or is prevented from doing the work she chooses, this is discrimination or victimisation." In a written ruling, the judge added that for an experienced detective, her judgment throughout was very poor. She went on, "Her lack of perspective is astonishing. It gives rise to concern that winning a tribunal claim may have a detrimental effect on future judgment." And this is interesting for a couple of reasons, really. And this is just typical of the way that blacks behave. If they don't get their way, then it must be racism. If they don't get a job, then it must be racism. And if they do, if they are lucky enough to actually get a job and they do get given the sack, then again, it must be racism that caused it, and there will be an employment tribunal. And this is what employers don't want to have to deal with. And the second point about this, I think, is the fact that this woman had very, very, very poor judgment, an astonishing lack of perspective and a very poor judgment. And yet this is a detective in the Metropolitan Police. So how did somebody with very poor judgment and an astonishing lack of perspective get to be so high up in the police? Well, because she's black. And this is obviously a diversity quota. This is because of a drive in the police force to employ more blacks and more non-whites. And this is what happens. You end up with substandard performance and racism claims. And all I can say really is, this good on this judge for not bowing to pressure and actually speaking the truth for once. I mean, that is a real turn up for the books, I think. What do you think about this, Florian?
Well, that was kind of my exact same conclusion. The most shocking part of this article is that this woman has lost her racism claims at all. I would have expected to see the court bend to her whim for exactly the same reason. But as you say, this behavior is extremely commonplace. And I have witnessed it firsthand and heard of it secondhand in many government positions in Canada as well. Well, which is, I mean, of course, like if you know that you can get out of work and maintain your job and, you know, collect those pension bonuses and so on and deflect any critiques over your poor performance by launching the accusation of racism, it's an eminently effective technique for those who are unscrupulous, which this lady most certainly is. It's such a funny story. I mean, I would like to see, what do you think her range scores are? How do you think her firearm skills are, considering that she was hired to be a firearms officer? And this is kind of, you know, the darkly dusky negress holding the MP5 is her, you know, kind of poster child, Genesis, right?
That's the thing, isn't it? It's the sexy pictures of her holding the gun, which the police put out to try and encourage more Negroes to join the police and learn how to use guns. I doubt whether she was very good with it. I think they just really picked her because she was picturesque and they could use her for some adverts. That was what she was used for, basically, was just so that they could put a face on this poster. And I think because of that, she thought, well, there's no chance I'm going to lose this case. No chance I'm going to lose this case. Also, Negroes have a highly inflated opinion of their own abilities as well. And that's been shown with psychology tests.
Yeah, that's very true. I will say, Sven, though, that I think that's it is both a curse and a most humorous blessing upon Negroes, because their limitless self-confidence is the origin of many, many very amusing circumstances, I think.
And anecdotes, indeed. Well, continuing with the article, she served 14 years with the Metropolitan Police, but quit in 2015 after she won her discrimination payout. She went on to apply for a temporary post as an investigator at the IPCC, now known as the Independent Office for Police Conduct. But she resigned after just 5 months while facing suspension and dismissal for submitting inaccurate timesheets. Her final month was spent on sick leave for stress and after suffering a laser injury to her neck. Within months, Miss Howard brought a fresh employment case against the police watchdog, accusing it of racism, victimisation and harassment. Judge Wade said Miss Howard's logic in claiming discrimination over the decision not to shortlist her at her first attempt to get the job was troubling, as her application was of poor quality. She said, "It is chronologically the first of many incidents showing the claimant has a poor ability to judge whether a situation is terrible or entirely understandable once the context is known. Miss Howard claimed the watchdog was institutionally racist and corrupt and alleged that other ethnic minority staff felt the same." Well, you know, what I would have to say about that is the IPCC, the Independent Police Complaints Commission, is what it used to be called, and they're notorious for always supporting the police and never actually supporting the public. It's got nothing to do with racism. I mean, they just aren't going to find anyone that complains about the police to be in the right. They are always going to find the police to be the ones that acted completely properly. And one of the reasons for that is because it's all ex-police that are a part of it. So, you know, it's got nothing to do with racism. And of course, all the other ethnic minority staff are going to say, oh, yes, it's institutionally racist and corrupt, because they're not all black there. You know, they've also got white people there. It's quite obvious that's going to happen. But this woman was obviously terrible at her job. And she was just going to make accusations of racism about anything, really. I mean, 33 claims she made for racism. And every single one of them has just been thrown away and said that they are completely meritless. Do you have an IPCC in Canada, Florian? Do you know much about these complaints commissions? I suspect it's very similar to the one in Britain.
No, I'm not aware of. It's very possible, but I confess my ignorance in these matters. I'm not aware of any provincial or federal board of review of police action. Although I'm sure it exists, but I guess we haven't reached the point where they've become as highly politicized and important as they are in the United Kingdom. You know, very, very different policing culture and all that business. Although we do suffer from some of the exact same issues. I mean, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police contracts out their services to various provinces as provincial police, most notably in British Columbia. And these guys are notorious. Mounties are not known to be the sharpest knives in the box at the best of times, but they are notorious for hiring like Sri Lankans and Malaysians, because these dudes will have you know, police experience in whatever countries they're from. And then, of course, it turns out that, you know, they have an extremely different concept of what constitutes appropriate policing in Sri Lanka and Malaysia.
Backsheesh and corruption, right, all the way. Bonuses.
Indeed. And so it's been a source of much tension and many complaints. And especially because of, well, especially in British Columbia, there are big issues with police corruption and ethnic crime and that kind of business.
Well, the other thing that she's saying here, I mean, she's using the words that we often hear over here in Britain, institutionally racist and corrupt. I mean, we've been told that's what the police are. The police are institutionally racist. They had a big investigation of them after this Negro called Stephen Lawrence was killed years ago. We're now having they're replacing St. George's Day with a Stephen Lawrence Day, which, you know, I find that very hard to actually believe that they are so brazen as to do that. But yes, they are. They're actually going to give us a public holiday in honor of Stephen Lawrence, this black guy that got killed ages back, that may or may not have been racist. But as a result of that, they investigated the police and ignored everything that the police told them, and listened to basically leftist agitators that said that the police were racist. And ever since then, we've been told that they are institutionally racist. So this Negress thought she would use that language, and of course she was bound to win. But not so when it's actually the Police Complaints Commission that she's making the complaint about, because they are the ones that will say whether something is institutionally racist or not. So she was onto a hiding to nothing, really, with this, I think. And continuing with the article, she complained she was barred from working on any cases involving her former force, even though the judge said that was perfectly sensible. Well, yeah, of course that's perfectly sensible. I mean, how could this woman be a police officer thinking that it would be okay to work on cases involving people that she worked with before, people that were former friends of hers? I mean, it's like being in a court case and having the jury knowing the people that are in the dock. I mean, this woman, she really hasn't got a lot up top. And the tribunal dismissed her attempt to claim the work she was given at the watchdog was quite dull. It also criticised her for working on confidential inquiries on the train and in a nearby branch of Starbucks. And she must have told them that she did this as well. I mean, again, not very bright to tell them that you're doing police work in Starbucks or on the train. And Miss Howard is now under investigation by the Information Commissioner for allegedly downloading sensitive data from the IPCC's computers after her employment. No doubt for purposes of blackmail or selling the information to the criminal underworld, I would guess. So yeah.
Well, the very presence of these kind of the bureaucrats, they worship pieces of paper and they crumple them up and kind of do them like drugs, frankly. And that's how their souls are sustained via inertia through the many long years it takes to acquire your pension, the federal employment. And so this kind of breach of protocol stuff extremely seriously. And so it seems to me like there's sort of been this perfect storm of kind of counterforces from within the bureaucracy that have overwhelmed the usually sacrosanct force of her claims of racism and have resulted in a somewhat reasonable ruling in this instance.
Well, it's very nice to have a positive ending to a news story. You know, a very positive ending. She's now under investigation.
Rare these days.
Well, the next one, again, it's quite a funny news story, but it has a bit of a sinister undertone to it, I think. Sexuality expert says babies should give consent for diaper changes. Sexuality expert and author Deanne Carson has attracted mass ridicule after suggesting babies should give consent to having their nappies or diapers changed by their parents. Speaking to ABC News Australia, Carson was asked what age clients she worked with. She replied, "We work with children from 3 years old and we work with parents from birth." "From birth," the host responds, to which Carson smugly retorts, "Yeah, just about how to set up a culture of consent in their homes. So I'm going to change your nappy now. Is that okay?" Of course, the baby isn't going to respond, "Yes, Mum, that's awesome. I'd love to have my nappy changed." But if you leave a space and wait for body language and wait to make eye contact, then you're letting that child know that their response matters. Carson likely underestimated the response, however, of the internet, which has roundly mocked her and her expertise on the subject matter. She also failed to communicate what would or should happen if said baby refuses to consent to having their diaper changed. But to think that, you know, she's working with children from birth about giving consent, I mean, this leads into this idea that innocent children can give consent, which is what the pedophiles are constantly pushing. And we've seen some non-white invaders into Europe that have had their sentences reduced by saying that they were unaware that children couldn't give consent in Europe, which implies that they think that 8-year-olds can give consent in Afghanistan or in Africa. And we're bending to their will over here and saying, okay, they don't understand our culture. They didn't realize that that young boy didn't want to be raped. They thought he gave their consent. And at the other end of the scale, we've also got homosexuals saying that the age of consent should be younger. We've got pedophiles saying that children should be able to give consent to sex. And we've even got the, I'm not sure if it was actually a podcast I did with you, Florin, about one of the heads of the UN, who actually thought up the writing for the rights of a child at the UN, who was actually prosecuted for pedophilia and for child abuse. And this was the guy that was, yeah, he was writing the human rights for children's rights. And that's what they mean by it, is a child's right to give consent. And an innocent child cannot give consent. That's why they're innocent. They cannot give properly informed consent. They rely on their parents to do that. That's why it's their parents and their parents' child. The child is happy to be thought of as a possession of its parents. It doesn't want to be given consent. A child wants to be told what its boundaries are, what it can do, what it can't do. It doesn't want to be doing that itself. If it's doing that itself, it's going to lead to all sorts of psychological damage, which of course we've got going on today anyway with all the promotion of homosexuality. So I think there's a bit of a sinister side to this, as well as the stupidity of this woman thinking that babies should be given consent to change nappies.
I agree with you 100%. And I think that you're exactly correct that this is the underlying issue here, is that I think a couple of weeks ago there's a brilliant flowchart from Iron March on what happens if you accept egalitarianism and the downstream consequences of that. And I think we've included it in some of the podcasts we've done already, but it's so brilliant that I want to eulogize Iron March. And anyway, it's great. And so, but it basically goes through the section is that once you accept egalitarianism, if you take this to its logical conclusion, then children must be able to consent. I mean, because if there's no fundamental difference between the sexes or between biological categories or between the rights and dignity of man and animal, and these sort of things, then it seems to follow, naturally speaking, that children, because there is no fundamental difference in the quality of dignity or capacities or faculties within humans and other, you know, animals, then of course they can give consent. And we saw this, it's not, as you point out, just, you know, in this one avenue. This is a multi-pronged kind of legal subversion technique that is going on all across the Western world. For instance, in Canada, they've made considerable progress in order to institute and enshrine these in law. When they were going and passing the assisted suicide euthanasia bill here in Canada, they were including some of these draft bills. They were including legal clauses that would allow quote-unquote mentally competent children to elect to be euthanized based on mental illness, on severe and crippling mental illness. So literally, you could have a teenager who gets depressed, wants to kill themselves, thinks that life is not worth living, and then, you know, if a court says that they're mentally competent, they can kill themselves with doctor assistance. And the law would establish a right to death, that you can demand that the state put you to death.
That's right.
And so this is the culture that's being promoted by this legal precedent, about this idea, you know, that children can give consent. I mean, and it's totally warped and twisted. It's very easy to understand. I think most people, especially in the West, that children have, you know, dignity, right? Because they're part of a family, you know, as Christians, you know, baptized in the image of Christ and so on. And so, you know, you don't abuse them or subject them to shame or humiliation, but they certainly have no sovereignty or free will.
Well, this is it, isn't it? This is the way they get around it. They try to say that they are respecting a child's dignity by saying that a child should be able to give consent. And that's not giving the child dignity. You know, as I say, the child is a possession of the parents. The parents are responsible for what happens to that child, not the child in itself. You know, it's this double language. I mean, all of this is couched in flowery terms: human rights, equality. We just want there to be justice for everyone. We want everyone to have rights, and all of it is actually against human dignity, against the dignity of children, against the dignity of men, against the dignity of women, and especially against the dignity of white people, to be telling us that we are the same as Negroes. But this next article that I've got here, again, this is just so ridiculous. Police gang crime database accused of racism because 80% of the criminals are black. And this is a serious news story that has been headline news in Britain recently. Britain has been told to scrap its racialized war on youth violence after an investigation accused the nation of breaching human rights law with police use of an anti-gangs database featuring predominantly black male suspects. Amnesty International called on the government to urgently review the Metropolitan Police's gangs matrix and set up a public inquiry after it found that black men constituted 78% of 3,500 people registered on the monitoring database. You know, nothing about, well, hang on a minute, isn't it a bit worrying that blacks are committing all this crime? But, oh no, it must be racism. That's the only reason why these people that stab people, throw acid in people's faces and sell drugs. It's only because of racism that they're on this database. And the company that is doing this is supposed to be a charity that looks at political prisoners. And all they can think of to investigate Britain for is this gang register. I mean, this is just speechless when we have countless political prisoners in Britain at this very moment that Amnesty is doing absolutely nothing about and won't even look into it. But they're going to say that the Metropolitan Police are racist because they've actually thought to keep a record of all the people that they arrest that are involved in gang warfare. And this is unbelievable. This is being accused of racism, but I guess it's predictable. You got anything you'd like to say on that, Florian?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's par for the course, right? And I mean, the difficulty with these subjects is these are obvious and apparent for most of our listeners, but for many people, they're unwilling to make, you know, that moral, intellectual decision to look at the reality of the world around them and accept that it is, in fact, the truth that blacks, in all instances, commit more violent crime than every other demographic. And this is one of the, you know, Jared Taylor has got some really good, you know, data, you know, looking around the world at, you know, African immigrants and the rates of crime that they commit in various societies and cities. And they find that, you know, adjusted for numbers, it's relatively stable across all civilizations and continents. And so, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, widely known in Canada, you know, that police, of course, the police are racist against black guys, which you will hear with scorn and derision from middle-class white people, you know, who refuse to admit the reality of the situation, which is they are racist against Negroes because Negroes commit more crime.
Well, I was going to say, we have an MP over here called David Lammy. And he did a similar thing to Jared Taylor, except he didn't actually go to Africa, but he went around all the white countries and took records of how many blacks were in prison. And then he came back and gave a report to the British government that it was racism that had caused all of this. And it was systemic racism everywhere in all white countries. Everybody was being racist to blacks. And that's why they were 8 times more likely to be in prison. But he didn't actually think to go back to the African homelands to measure how many Negroes were in prison and how many crimes that are carried out by Negroes, because, you know, that would have blown his theory apart. And nobody has still mentioned that. All our politicians just bend over backwards to accommodate this guy when he blames racism for it. And it's the same thing here. We've actually got some good quotes from him later on. I mean, you just wait till you hear the responses to this, Florian. There is clearly a huge problem with knife crime violence at the moment in London, but the gangs matrix is not the answer, said Amnesty International's UK director Kate Allen, asserting that the list is part of an unhelpful and racialised focus on the concept of gangs. The Mayor of London needs to dismantle the matrix unless he can bring it in line with international human rights standards, she said. Well, I wonder, what is she going to suggest to do then to deal with one murder a day and multiple stabbings that we have in London? I mean, this is a record of the people that are likely to be carrying out these stabbings and these murders. And she's saying, oh, no, get rid of that because it's racialized, because it has far too many blacks on it. And it's just unbelievable that this woman doesn't offer any other solution whatsoever. She just says, oh, you've got to stop this because it's racist. And I pointed out before that this problem isn't because of Sadiq Khan being the mayor of London. This problem is because London is full of blacks and non-whites, and gang warfare is the same as tribal warfare in Africa. Continuing with the article, the entire system is racially discriminatory, according to the Amnesty boss, who explained that the matrix perpetuates racial bias by stigmatizing young black men for the type of music they listen to. This claim was denied, however, by Scotland Yard in a statement which said the style of music that someone listens to has no bearing on whether someone is placed on the matrix. However, evidence that someone is glorifying gang violence in a music video posted on social media can be used as an intelligence source, they said, noting the requirement for at least 2 corroborated pieces of intelligence on an individual before they are even put on the list. Police defended their use of the database, which was set up in 2011, after major riots hit the capital, insisting its aim is to reduce gang-related violence and prevent young lives from being lost. And to say that this is down to the style of music that Negroes listen to, and because they listen to this music, that's why they've been put on this matrix. I mean, that's a complete nonsense. This is a criminal list, a list of criminals. And yet the Amnesty boss thinks the police are just picking on them because they don't like rap music. Just unbelievable.
Right. Well, there's an excellent expression that can be used when discussing the kind of bureaucratic speak that we've had such a full dose of today. That is, these people are not really attempting to communicate with the outside world, but are pretending to communicate with the outside world. They're like talking dogs. They're barking with no meaning. And so this is the difficulty, is that you reach the level with the officials in the government and so on, and what the narrative that they want the public to accept is so dissonant from reality and addresses so little of the substance of the situation that it's a tantamount to just bold-faced lying to everyone, to barking about nonsense. And so I don't know what else there is to say, because when you reach the point when there's no conversation on the issues at hand, there's not even the pretenses of addressing maybe some of the actual real causes of the violence, there's not really any positive solution that's going to be reaped from such a discussion. It's just vanity. And so, yeah, I mean, it's unfortunately the United Kingdom kind of at the masthead, and all of the rest of these Western European countries that refuse to address the ongoing epidemic of racially linked, violent crime, caused by the mass importation of these people into our countries, will only spell the way for immense, immense bloodshed in the future. Because if these problems are not addressed now, then they will be addressed later on by means likely less polite and amenable to cocktail party conversation.
That's just leading up to extreme violence and civil war on the streets. I mean, to say that, you know, these guys have only been put on the list because they like rap music, that's just absolutely ludicrous. Well, what we can do is have a few laughs at what the responses to this has been. We've got some suggestions from black MPs on how to deal with black gang violence. The Labour politician and black identity activist David Lammy blasted the Register for profiling urban young black men as gang members. And he questioned why the Bullingdon Club of wealthy Oxford University students are not considered by police to be a gang. Well, probably because the Bullingdon Club don't stab people. They go to expensive restaurants and host dinners there. As David Cameron and Boris Johnson and people like that, they're all members of the Bullingdon Club. And David Lammy seriously suggests that the Bullingdon Club should be put on this list. And last month, former Labour leadership contender and boyfriend of Luciana Berger, Chaka Amunna, said removing the word gang from public discourse would help solve rampant youth violence in London. And he claimed that the term reinforces the notion that they are gangsters when they are not. So he's suggesting just stop using the word gang and then gangs will cease to exist, which is really Negro logic at its finest there. I mean, to say that they're not gangsters when these guys are, as I say, shooting each other, stabbing each other, throwing acid in each other's faces. And Chaka Amunna thinks they're just little didn't-do-nothing boy next door. Chaka Amunna finishes his quote here. He says, at the heart of any strategy must be a public health approach which looks at violence as a condition enabled by society, stated the former shadow business secretary, who has previously called for authorities to treat London's knife crime epidemic as a mental health issue. So what he's basically saying there is, can't Whitey invent some magic pills to make the Negroes behave themselves? And again, he's blaming the violence as a condition of these Negroes that's been forced upon them by society. It's got nothing to do with the Negro behaviour in itself. It's all a problem caused by society. The solution to all of this is really, really simple. Just get rid of the blacks. And then we won't have any violence in our society. The same as we didn't have any violence in our societies before they came. And we were the envy of the rest of Europe for our law-abiding citizens in Britain. And ever since we've had immigration, we just get incredible ultra-violence on our streets. And white people are too afraid to go out, and they can't even speak up for themselves now for fear of being sent to prison. And of course, Amnesty, as I said, is going to completely ignore them. Have you got any thoughts on these responses to this, these ideas of stopping gang warfare?
well, it seems to me that there's kind of So with his first comment on if you just stop calling people gangsters, they will stop committing violence. it's really laughable, but he does make kind of halfway a good point with his Bullingdon Club suggestion. But instead, you know, rather than targeting dudes like Boris Johnson, why not, you know, discuss guys like the Cliveden set, you know, who had these other like you know, arch Anglo dudes back at the turn of the century who actually did, you know, orchestrate colonialism, you know, and British world imperialism, right? But obviously he's a shill for the descendants of these very same groups who are the globalists and the technocrats, you know. And I was just reading the other day that these groups like Cliveden set and so on, they had the Clarity Plan presented back to them in the early 1900s. It was Carol Quigley in his Anglo-American establishment was discussing this, kind of from the records of the Roundtable Group and Council on Foreign Relations, how there was all of this future kind of multicultural technocratic society, and the destruction of sanity by the manipulation of language was kind of part of the plan of the establishment for the last 100 years. And that's kind of going to the second issue where the, I know Dr. Johnson's talked about this a lot in recent days, the, pathologization, excuse me, of violence, where criminal behavior is considered to be one-to-one with mental illness, and there's no moral culpability or responsibility for the actions of criminals. And we've reached, you know, such a twisted level where, you know, you have the state, like, for instance, you know, the state could apply this logic to say, you know, people who are addicted to drugs, you know, and who actually are, you know, very seriously mentally ill, you know, who could be, you know, in hospitals, having treatment for their drug illness or mental illness, but they don't. They criminalize these people, and then they enable, you know, the trafficking of narcotics into these countries. And then they, you know, don't prosecute drug traffickers. So yeah, I mean, I think it's so much of the situation that we've come to is just, it's upside down world, it's clown world, where, you know, you state kind of the half truth and then you invert it, you know, in the opposite direction of your insinuation. But this is a purposeful, you know, technique to obfuscate and to distract people from the reality of the situation.
Well, yeah, so, I mean, these black MPs, they're just making excuses for the black gang members. As you say, they're just taking away all moral culpability for it and suggesting that it's an illness that can be fixed by giving them pills. And I do wonder, David Lammy, where he's suggesting that we just stop using the word gangs and gangsters. I think the logic where that comes from is where they've tried to ban using the word nigger, as if we don't use the word nigger, we'll stop thinking of blacks as niggers. And that will just make the problem go away. You know, it won't make the problem go away. You can't just ban words and expect problems to disappear just because people don't use the words anymore. You know, we can't ban the way that we think and the language that we use. That's the way that we do think. And just shows you the logic that Negroes have, and it also shows you the mentality of today's society. As you say, where it just pathologizes everything. You know, bad Jewish behavior. Well, oh no, that's not the Jews' fault. That's the Goyim's fault for getting upset at it. It must be a mental illness. It must be some virus that they've caught to make them into anti-Semites. It must be some mental illness that people have that makes them racist. You know, they've even tried to come out with medicine. They've tried to say that it's a lack of oxytocin that causes people to be racist. And if we inject them with oxytocin, they won't be racist anymore. Absolute nonsense. I doubt very much whether all nationalists have a lack of oxytocin. They tend to be able to actually think more and reason more than the general population. That's why we're racist. That's why we're nationalist. Anyway, Florian, we've probably gone a little bit over time here. Thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back on Monday with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless. Have a great weekend and hail victory.